Okay, we're ready. We're rolling, 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 rolling.
You know that actually, if you can, I don't know how much of the lyrics you have to do before you have to pay rights, but maybe you should zip it.
Okay.
I have a little anecdote about that.
Technically, I only said two words, so.
That might be enough. Welcome to Mustard A&A. I'm Matt.
I am Richard.
And we riff on things in the entertainment industry that capture our interest. Movies, DVDs, TV, radio, high definition,
gaming.
Yeah, we sort of throw that one in there at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And little different this week. We're doing it on a Tuesday evening instead of our usual Sunday morning.
Absolutely.
All right. So who knows what that will do to the vibe. It's the end of the workday.
Yeah, it's a different vibe. Been working all day, visiting kitty, cats. That's my job.
That's your job.
You've been playing with computers. That's your job.
That's my job. All right. I was listening to the commentary for The Recruit.
Oh, really? Wait. The Recruit. That's the Colin Farrell thing?
Yes.
Yep.
Because I was over at my buddy John's house and going through his DVD collection, seeing if there's anything I should borrow.
Yep.
So I borrowed Underworld.
Mm-hmm.
Which didn't suck as bad as I thought it might. It still wasn't good.
I thought you've seen that. You've never seen
it? I've never seen Underworld or Underworld Evolutions.
Evolution, yeah.
You know, and if I, you know, the original advertising was interesting. It looked visually interesting, and Kate Beckinsale and a
of course looks hot.
Hot cat, you know. I don't think it's leather. It's like
rubber,
plastic,
whatever
the hell it is. It is hot, very hot. It didn't suck as bad as I thought. It still wasn't very good, but didn't suck. Anyway, I also borrowed The Recruit, and I sort of thought, well, why would you have this DVD? It's a pretty it's just kind of there.
Yeah.
And he said, well, it has a commentary from Colin Farrell.
Oh, really?
And I said, oh, well, I will borrow that and give it a spin. So I did, and there's a bit in the middle of it where Colin Farrell sings a couple of Queen lyrics from We Will Rock You during a poker game.
Yep.
And the director says, and that little bit cost us some money because then we had to go get the rights to that song.
Oh, man. Were they implying it was an ad lib on Collins?
They were.
Wow.
And that they then had to go out and blow like $50,000 comes to mind. That could have just been them pulling something out of their butts. But can you imagine?
Well, you know, what's funny is
you'd think someone on a movie set during the filming would be knowledgeable enough to say, hey, maybe another take without the expensive ad lib calling.
Well, you know, it's funny. I have The Aristocrats, which got really good reviews. I didn't like it that much when I first, I didn't hate it. I just like, wow, this just sort of stood there. But watching the DVD with the commentary track of Penn Jillette and Paul Bravenza, I loved it so much more. And this is the movie about the joke. Okay, in case our listeners. So about the joke, you know, which we won't go into detail, but it's this filthy joke. And the whole point in the movie is how comedians riff on the same joke, but they riff on it different ways, kind of like jazz musicians. So anyway, at one point, one of the comedians is starting to talk, and he goes into this musical accompaniment, and Paul Prevenza or Penn Jillette, one of them, marvels and wonder at how inventive this guy was and how great it was that when he chose to launch into musical accompaniment, he picked a public domain song and how much they appreciated that. It was just ad lib, you know, just out of the blue, but they picked a song that wasn't going to cost them money and they doubly appreciated that. So
that's brilliant.
I thought that was funny.
Although to get back, listening to Colin Farrell do a commentary, isn't all that. I mean, it's okay.
Yeah.
He's not horrible, but it's funny because he, you know, at the beginning, it's the director and Colin Farrell. And, you know, how'd you get involved in the project? Oh, well, Al Pacino was attached. And I thought, oh, a chance to work with Al Pacino. I'll do that.
Yep.
And then the director says, that's how I came involved. I read the script. The script wasn't anything special, but Al Pacino and Colin Farrell. I wanted to work with you two. And I was like, wow.
Wow, that's how they get people together.
What a crushing indictment.
Yeah.
They both agree that Bridget Moynihan is hot. So
as do I.
We've got that going on. Anyway.
I've been watching a couple. For whatever reason, I've been watching DVDs again, and I happened to pull out two DVDs that both had Tommy Lee Jones commentary tracks, and one was Men in Black, which I had to like search my memory. Do I own this DVD? And I didn't. So I bought the thing for like $6 and it had a pretty good commentary track with the director.
Barry Sonnenfeld.
Yeah. Barry Sonnenfeld.
I've listened to that.
And Tommy Lee Jones. And it was actually pretty good. And I've heard like, you know, indifferent things about Tommy Lee Jones. And listen to that, you just realize he's not a jerk or an a-hole. He is who he is. And he's not hugely comfortable with promoting things, but he clearly enjoys his work and enjoyed working on this movie. But then I watched, the Fugitive commentary track, and this was a commentary track. And this was one of those movies that they put out in DVD, like in 98. And back then they were still trying to figure out how do we put together commentary tracks. And occasionally they would take different commentaries and they would edit them together like they were brilliant or something. Mm-hmm. So what they had there was Tommy Lee Jones and the editor, and they edited together like they were in the same room, but they weren't. So periodically the director would say something and then they would edit in Tommy Lee Jones randomly going, "Oh yeah, that's right." Because they found that somewhere else.
It's
painful. And they would make some joke and it was like they were trying to edit a conversation that didn't exist. Absolutely painful. But anyway, it was interesting to see both of those movies again, because you end up realizing how long ago Men in Black was and how I assumed so much of it was digital and very little of it was. And the little that was kind of looked fake at this point. And then they also mentioned the very end, he had this idea for a final ending scene. And he said, "Oh, and this 30 seconds cost me $1 million. And he shows, this scene of, you know, where the camera pulls
the pullback.
Yeah. The pullback, yeah. back. And then it turns out our universe is just some aliens playing marbles and yours. Funny and clever and cute. And what was funny is in many ways nowadays, that scene would have cost several $1 million, depending on who did it, or maybe $5,000 if they got some of the people who put Serenity together to do it, because it would have looked just as good. And it was interesting how things have changed. If the Pirates of the Caribbean people did it, it would have looked fantastic and cost $2 million.
And it was cool, although it wasn't the first time I'd heard of that idea.
Yeah.
I think the first time I read it was in a Stephen King book, one of his Dark Tower books, where they're saying that all that universe is like part of an atom and a grain of sand in some other universe.
Well, the book,
if I remember correctly,
the movie or the I don't know about the movie, but the book, It, that big, huge one with the crazy clown that sucked people. Well, that whole thing ended up with two weird. It was like two aliens like out in the universe, like the whole thing was like based on these two aliens having this series of conversations or fight with each other. It was bizarre.
Are you sure it was It and not,
maybe it wasn't It.
The Dreamcatcher?
No, it wasn't Dreamcatcher.
Dreamcatcher had two aliens doing,
but it wasn't, I'm pretty sure it was It. And I remember going and getting there and going, "What the hell is this? Who are these people?" It was some weird meta thing, but anyway, I digress. So I did watch a couple commentary tracks, and I also watched Wedding Crashers, and it had Owen Wilson and Vince Vaughn. And that's one of those it's a fun commentary track because these guys clearly like each other. They like riffing on it. They like talking, you know. Some star commentary tracks are painful, but not when you got two stars in a room that are funny and like each other. So anyway,
I think probably our top story, now that we're 10 minutes in, Clerks 2.
Yeah, which I managed to friggin' miss.
Have you not seen it yet?
I've not. Oh. Feel free to talk about it. I've heard enough about it. But I was going to go see it on Friday night, and we get out there, and the damn movie, both showings, get sold. Well, we were going to come back for the second one. By the time we come back for the second one, it's sold out.
You didn't buy tickets in advance?
Well, we weren't sure if we were going to see it. We were still contemplating going to go to another theater, this whole thing. But suffice it to say, I mean, the movie did okay, but dang, at least where I am, They could have put it on more screens, for God's sakes.
I saw it Saturday morning.
Yeah.
I could have seen it Friday night. Turns out I didn't have to work late. But saw it Saturday morning, probably six other people in the screening.
Yep. So it was early.
It was like an 11:30 showing, because I got stuff to do.
Yeah.
I loved it.
Got great reviews.
I thought it was a very good movie. A number of things struck me as I watched it. One was Kevin Smith's a lot better filmmaker. He really is growing, even though he's doing, you know, he's done venturing out from his comfort zone.
Yeah.
You know, he knows I've seen a lot of interviews lately where he's saying, I know what kind of director I am. I know what kind of movies I make. I don't need to make anything different. I'm fine with this.
Yeah.
But that being said, the way they're moving the camera around, the way he chose to shoot things, I thought was a lot more professional than even, I was going to say Jersey Girl, but he had
Vilmos Zsigmond.
Yeah, he had the big shot on that.
And even then, it wasn't particularly adventurous. It looked good, but
I mean, I'm not saying this was adventurous. I'm just saying it was really good for Smith.
Yeah.
But beyond that, and it being pretty funny, I think the level of humor wasn't quite at the avant-garde Clerks level.
Yep.
Just in so terms of
maybe really, a little more accessible.
Well, Clerks knocked you on your ass.
Yeah.
In terms of what he was writing about, it knocked me on my ass.
Yep.
This is still good, but it wasn't quite, didn't have quite the punch.
Yeah.
But the way he was able to do that and still really keep an authentic message in it.
Yeah.
That really kind of struck home was very well done. I thought he really did a good job.
A lot of the reviews, they really pointed out, they talks about bestiality and all these other things.
It doesn't talk about it. It practically shows you the donkey act.
Okay. Well, so what did you think about all of, Kevin Smith? You heard about the Joel Siegel incident,
yes,
right? Okay, so Joel Siegel gets up and loudly walks out of theater, and Kevin Smith hears about this and writes a scathing.
I think he was actually in that screening.
Yeah, well, he writes this big attack on Joel Siegel for leaving and doing all this other stuff. And then word comes out, like on a couple levels, that Kevin Smith sort of notoriously reads everything written about him. And if he doesn't like it, he kind of calls people up and takes them to task on that. It was interesting because when he does take him to task, it's unbelievably entertaining. I loved reading what he said about Joel Siegel.
And we should point out, he wasn't pissed that Joel Siegel left. He was pissed that Joel Siegel left in a noisy and look at me, I'm leaving drama queen manner.
And to Joel Siegel's infinite credit, Joel Siegel actually apologized in a pretty cool way. He said, you know, you're right, I shouldn't have done that. Which I thought, wow, that's probably the only thing Joel Siegel could have done and come out looking cool. And he did do the right thing.
Oh, good for him.
Because he shouldn't have. But the thing that struck me a little bit was I didn't realize how sensitive Kevin Smith apparently was, because he comes across as pretty blasé about stuff, but apparently internalizes it.
I don't know how celebrities deal with that, because M. Night Shyamalan was on the Daily Show last week or the day week before.
Yep.
And one of the big things they talked about was, it's really interesting to walk down the street and have one person say, you're awesome, and the next person in line say, you suck.
Yeah.
Your movies are great. Your movies suck.
Yep.
You know, there's been a lot of press recently about Shyamalan having a big head, having a big ego, the whole Lady in the Water thing, which has apparently tanked. And actually hearing him on the Daily Show, you know, talking about people telling him he sucks, I don't know how big an ego can you have when you're exposed to people telling you suck.
Yeah, I was thinking, seeing him on the Daily Show and listening to Howard Stern, I can't help but really like the guy and think, dang, I don't care what kind of ego he has. I mean, he's putting himself out there. And he's saying, you know, for better or for worse, my movies are sold on me. Because I'm this thing, he's not necessarily saying it has to be the way it does. And he's saying the downside of that is people really go after you. And it's, God, the amount of criticism he got in the last month and a half is withering. I mean, I couldn't have handled that.
Yeah.
Hopefully he'll write something good. Hopefully he won't take every little bit of advice. I can't believe how many different people have decided to offer him advice, and hopefully he'll just let it slide under the bridge and just do what he keeps doing.
Yeah. What's next? Move on. What's next?
Exactly.
But back to Clerks for a minute, Rosario Dawson, very good.
She's hot.
I mean, but she's a really good actress.
Yeah.
Cause you know, I turned to John and say, where are fishnets, alluding to Sin City.
Yeah.
But really it's amazing that the same actress did both parts. Anyway, it's a credit to her that she was willing to do this, and she is really good in the film.
Yeah.
Anyway, Clerks 2, highly recommended.
Yeah. Well, I was mentioning to you the other day, I was going, dang, you know, I love movies. You and I both love movies, and I like going to see movies. But I was sitting out, and I know for a fact I'll see Clerks 2 definitely in the theater. But I was sitting there thinking, going, God, of all the directors I love, David Fincher, Steven Spielberg, some foreign directors, dang, Kevin Smith's the only one that every one of his last four movies, if I include Clerks 2, I've actually seen in the theater. Even Fincher, who's like as great a director as can get, I didn't see Panic Room in the theater. So I'm thinking, wow, there's something about Kevin Smith. I don't even consider myself a huge Kevin Smith fan, but when he's got a new movie out, I am uniquely excited to see his movies. So I begin to realize, boy, that View Askew universe, I'm definitely part of it, even if I don't dip into it all the time.
And it's interesting because I used to read the News Askew website all the time.
Yep.
And I kind of dropped off recently, mainly because there's just so many hours in the day.
Yep.
So this is probably the Kevin Smith film I have been least every day. Not, you know, I didn't watch any of the really of his video blog and making the movie, hardly read any of his posts on his blog, not for lack of wanting to, just not enough time in the day.
Yeah, same here.
And so that was kind of interesting for me because I remember Jay and Silent Bob Strikes Back.
Oh yeah.
You know, I was very plugged in. It debuted it was coming out in the summer of 2001. That was the summer I went to Comic-Con in San Diego. Yep. They brought a print, and I remember I went to the table, the film studio that was releasing it had a table at Comic-Con. I went, I said, did you guys bring a print? Is there a screening? And she kind of looked around and said, yes, there is. And I said, how are you distributing tickets? May I have one? She said, we don't know yet. It's really up to Kevin. And so I said, okay, thank you very much. And Kevin, it turns out, was giving them away during his panel.
Yeah.
Basically, if you asked a question, you got a ticket. Hmm. Well, they never got to me. So I was really upset I didn't get a ticket to see it. I finally, and they were showing it right a few blocks away at the Horton. Horton's like the founder of San Diego. So everything is Horton this, Horton that.
Yep.
Little shopping complex in Old Town there. Gas Town, whatever it's called. Anyway, I went there on a lark to troll the line to see if anybody standing in line had an extra seat off their two-pass ticket. One guy did, let me in.
Nice.
Got into the screening. Kevin Smith was in the screening. It was the first public screening of the film.
Wow.
They had done a couple of test screenings, but of not with public audiences. So this was the first. Anyway, and that was a really, really cool experience for me. So I've got the sort of connection with that movie.
You know, I saw Howard Stern's Private Parts as a sneak screen in Seattle. It turns out Howard Stern was in the audience.
Oh, wow.
Well, we didn't know that, and he didn't say it. It was because Howard Stern was not on in Seattle at the time, so they wanted to do a test audience in a community that didn't know Howard Stern to see how they would react. But the funny thing is, it was everybody still knew about him, so it was a lot of dopes like me that liked the guy, even though we never heard about it. So have you noticed that Comic-Con has suddenly become... All the major entertainment reporters are sending people to Comic-Con now they're not doing it before. They hadn't seen it before.
It's been ramping up for a while because Comic-Con, it's the biggest comic book convention in the country, but it has increasingly been a pop culture convention
and movie. And
so what's been happening is any geek movie, any movie that would have geek appeal had a presence there, whether it was a booth or a panel where they'll have the director there, maybe a star, they'll show a couple minutes of the film, answer questions, whatever. You know, stuff like Star Wars or, you know, the X-Men movies, the Spider-Man movies, you know, Superman movies.
Batman,
you know, obviously these are it's like catnip.
Yeah.
But increasingly, it's anything that would at all appeal to the audience. This year, Snakes on a Plane had a panel there, which really has no comic book crossover whatsoever. It's just that it's got this weird whole internet cultural vibe thing going on that they're trying to tap into. So it's increasingly becoming less about comic books and more about movies that would appeal to maybe a geekier audience, maybe, although I think even that trend is becoming more and more less geeky.
It just struck me as weird that I'm sitting here reading Jeff Wells and Dave Poland, who I don't think had ever even mentioned Comic-Con prior to this year. And suddenly they both felt it was critical that they go to it.
And yet very little newsworthy came out of Comic-Con this year in terms of movies. Really nothing.
Yeah. And most of their comments were snarky. They were like, it was like being dismissive. It was like this and that.
You know, there was some stuff that like the voice of Optimus Prime for the Transformers movies, who I can't remember for the life of me.
Yeah.
And, you know, and a few other things. Like, apparently there's a movie, Children of Men, which Wells learned about at Comic-Con or learned more about and said it's pretty good, and that I went and found the trailer on.
Oh, is that the one with Adam Sandler?
No, it's Clive Owen.
God
it's
dang, that one with Adam Sandler. I was like, just looking at the picture, that's I'm on going, my list. Okay, cool.
But anyway, sort of a near future thing. It looks really good.
Mm-hmm.
But just there really isn't any gigantic presence of anything at Comic-Con, which that's Richard's gay little cell phone
turning
noise.
Off my phone.
Not that you can control some of the gay noises a cell phone makes, but
I prefer not to use epithets that are disparaging of certain
all right, radio anecdote. Working in one of the radio stations I worked at,
before you get honest, I just want to let you know that I know the anecdote you're about to share, and I shared people with that. I told people today, but of course I backtracked and said, because I work in an office of women and sometimes that comes across as offensive, but it's perhaps my favorite radio anecdote. Okay. So go ahead and share it.
One of the stations I've worked at, not the one I'm currently at, I was working in the common area prepping for my show.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the other radio employees was there prepping for his show. And someone's little cell phone jingle goes off. It's a little ditty. And he makes a big show of looking around, you know, sort of stands up, looks around, and then very loudly asks, "Whose cell phone is set to gay?" Oh, man.
Well, today a phone went off today, and I had to go. And I've tried various words, because it's always a challenge to throw out gay, because you don't want people to think you're somehow homophobic or something. So I tried, okay, whose cell phone is set to annoy? And then there was some Twitters. It doesn't do it. And then I had to say, well, honestly, there's a much better word. But, you know, I have to go through this whole meta thing. Anyway, but I love that. And in the right context, I use it all the time.
Anyway.
That particular host is a genius.
There was like, I don't know if this was related to Comic-Con or not. Like, there's a new trailer for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Yeah. No interest on my part.
Which they're redoing as a CGI film.
Oh, well, that might be interesting.
And it's funny because a lot of people, because I'm a few years younger than you.
Yeah.
And that.
So you grew up on that a little bit.
The original cartoon came out right when I was watching cartoons.
Yeah.
And I liked it at the time. And so I'm sure they're going for some nostalgia value. Well, but
did you see?
I saw the first movie in the theater twice.
That was like 87 or something about then.
Don't remember.
Yep.
Really liked it at the time.
Yep.
I don't think I saw any of the others. You know, it doesn't look bad, but it just, what's the interest level?
Yeah.
And you know, if a new generation of kids gets into it, fine. I would say the one gag at the end of the trailer was to me very telescoped. You knew it was coming.
Yeah.
Which just I hate. there's a new there's a teaser poster out for the oh my God, not J.J. Abrams, is it?
Oh, the Star Trek.
Yeah, is it?
Yeah, J.J. Abrams. Yeah.
Wow, it's the end of the day.
It's like a little period. Yeah.
Which, you know, and it's basically the old school Star Trek logo, the emblem that was on the shirts.
Yep.
With half of it, and then half of a Kirk gold shirt and half of a Spock blue shirt.
Yeah.
And it looks interesting, you know. It's a teaser poster. It says, hey, we've got something coming out 2008.
This Sunday, they're filming a roast, Comedy Central roast.
Yeah, well, no, what? They've already filmed it.
Oh, was it last Sunday?
I don't know. They don't do these things live, I don't think.
Oh, I know they don't do them, but on Howard Stern, Artie Lang's going to be on that. He's talking about him having to fly out this weekend.
I assumed they had already taped it.
You're right, it might have been last. It was. Also, I know it was on a Sunday anyway, but they have Sulu's participating in it, and he's notorious for hating James, Shatner. And of course, Spock is going to be part of it. And I think it's going to be great because he's so dang pompous, and people can be savage, and he's just going to laugh it off. He loves that stuff. Well, I think it'll be great.
William Shatner has really, really embraced the making fun of himself.
Absolutely.
Thing. He knows, you know, he embraces the overacting thing.
Absolutely.
Which you got to love. And I read his two Star Trek memories books.
Yep.
I thought they're actually pretty good for what they are. They're it's his remembrances of making the show and making the movies, and also and saying, I didn't realize how much some of my coworkers didn't like me.
Yeah.
And confronting that, maybe not completely resolving it, but at least addressing it.
Yep.
I thought that was really quite something.
I can't help but love the guy. And it was cool. He just got nominated for an Emmy. So, and what's kind of cool is he goes back and forth. If his career's on the wane, he'll be doing infomercials and our stuff. And then he gets right back up there. And so many other people, they fall into a funk and he just keeps plugging away and he's so entertaining. I honestly can't wait for that.
What else on my list? Oh, as we've completely gone off topic, so to speak, doesn't matter. I finally saw The Matador.
Oh yeah, what'd you think of that? That's the
really good movie.
The Pierce Brosnan. He's a gay. No, he's not.
He's a hitman who's suffering a breakdown.
Oh okay.
Really good film.
Who directed it again? Was it Roger Donaldson?
No one you've heard of.
Oh really?
Because it was a guy that was trying to get a writing gig for Thomas Crown Affair 2. So he sent in a writing sample to Pierce Brosnan's production company. Yep. They liked it so much, they decided to make the writing sample.
Did he produce the movie too?
Brosnan's company did, yes.
Cool.
And it was a really good movie. I think the director had done, it sounds like he had done some cheapo B group, million-dollar budget stuff before. Yep. But it sounded like, because I watched the movie, listened to the actor's commentary, and then listened to the director's commentary. So I saw it three times in one day.
I've done that many times myself.
The director really knows what he's doing. He really did a good job on, I think they said a $12 million budget, they shot the entire thing in Mexico. Yep. They doubled some locations. There's some stuff that was set in Denver you'd never know was shot in Mexico.
Yep.
Anyway, they did a really good job. They've got great actors. But it's another one of those, you don't need to spend $80 million to make a movie. You can spend $10 or $12 million to make a good movie. And it doesn't look like a cheap movie. It looks like a good movie.
Yeah.
Really well done.
Is it a comedy?
It's a bunch of different things. It's got comic elements. It's got drama. It's not a dramedy, really. It's just a really good movie. It's got thriller elements. It's got the drama elements. It's got comedy in it.
I definitely want to see it. In fact, there's probably three different times when I just came unbelievably later, and it was like a matter of, well, this one starts at 7:30, this one starts at 7:10. So, and I could have just easily seen it because it really hung out there in theaters for a very long time in the art house circuit. So in Seattle, it was at the Metro, which is has a lot of theaters. Then it was at the Crest and the Seven Gables. So now it's on DVD. I'll definitely be picking it up.
No, very good movie. You will enjoy it.
Cool.
And it may, I've got this thing where if I see a movie either good or bad in one sort of genre or one sort of element, I'll want to see something similar that's been good. Like, God, what did I, when I came coming out of X-Men 3 and seeing, Vinnie Jones made me want to see Snatch.
Yeah.
So I watch this movie and it makes me want to see The Tailor of Panama.
Oh, I love that
movie. Not because I thought this was bad and I wanted to see the good version of this. Like when I came out of, watching K-19 Widowmaker. Ugh. That made me want to see Hunt for Red October, the good submarine movie. Anyway, this made me want to see Tailor of Panama, another really good Pierce Brosnan thriller, anti-James Bond film.
Cool.
Anyway, very good movie. All right, next on the list. So trailers, Children of Men, we already mentioned. That it's a pretty good trailer.
Cool.
Pretty good. Clive Owen set near future. I saw a poll quote that it was like the anti-Blade Runner.
Really?
So is it science fiction? Like there's a fertility crisis where women stop having babies, and it's like society starts to crumble.
Yeah.
And it looked pretty interesting. Not like flying car science fiction. He just set 10 years in the future, kind of.
Oh, yeah.
Sort of near future, but looked interesting.
I haven't even heard of that movie. The only trailer I saw recently is I saw the, I don't know if it's on your list, The Fountain.
I have not seen that trailer on purpose because I saw a thing on Ain't It Cool where one of the guys was saying that some of his favorite images from the film, which was also screened at San Diego, were in the trailer. And he says, if you really want to be as spoiler-free as possible, don't watch the trailer.
Yeah. Well, I
saw the teaser.
Yeah.
But I didn't see the trailer. And so I'm purposefully not seeing the trailer because I really want to.
I won't give anything away that hasn't been mentioned, that it takes place in.
Yeah. Three
time periods. Okay. So that said, I looked at that and And I thought, I hope this movie's great. I like Aronofsky. I very much liked his Crazy Drug movie. And, you know, I just like the director. So that said, I don't like movies that do this. Let's tell the story over three time frames. I've seen some like that. Or movies that take place over an extended, like, centuries thing. From like Contact, which took place over 60 years with Jodie Foster, or whatever, to Bicentennial Man. There's a movie like
I
this.
I never saw Bicentennial
Man. Oh, it's just terrible.
See how that got screwed up. And I thought Contact did it fine.
I actually like Contact, but it just, I do too, in a sense, but I'm just saying I'm wary only because for some reason the not the compression, but the expansion of time throws me. Mm-hmm. And then the worst one was this thing called Human Being or something. It was with Robin Williams, and it was directed by this great director named John Forsythe. I think it's John Forsythe, or Bill Forsythe, this Scottish director, but just terrible. I was looking at this and I'm going, boy, I hope they don't screw this up, because that can be really jarring, can be annoying. And that was my initial impression. Okay. Hopefully it's good. Anyway, I digress.
Also just saw the Illusionist trailer.
Yeah. What'd you think?
Interesting.
Yeah.
Pretty interesting. Because Edward Norton, who is the Illusionist.
Yep.
You know, he's sort of made a big deal about really just trying to take roles that are interesting to him. And usually he does a good job.
Yep.
Except for like when he's contractually bound to the Italian job.
Which he wasn't bad in, but apparently he was mad as the day is long to be in that movie.
But this also has Paul Giamatti.
Yep.
Who looks very interesting as sort of this period police inspector.
Yeah, he kind of looked like what you'd expect somebody to look that way. And Jessica Biel.
Ooh, I like me likey.
I don't know. The movie was the closing or opening film at the Seattle International Film Festival.
Yep. Oh, I didn't know that.
Yep. And it got a lot of press for that. And Edward Norton, I think, was here for that. But you know, I'm hearing mezzo things about it. So it's hard to gauge it. I like Edward Norton and I like it. And that movie that kind of came in earlier,
Down in the Valley or something.
I wish I'd seen that. Cause to me, I like it when Edward Norton kind of goes off the deep end, and I'm not so sure he's going to do it in this movie, but I like it when he does. So I don't know. I'm kind of half interested in this thing.
Okay. Not trailers, but on to just things of note. The Sandler movie you mentioned was a Rain Over Me.
Have you heard about this at all?
Not prior to reading about it in Wells.
And it was like, it's like, okay, not only is it a serious role, but it's not him doing his best, but them going on his limitations.
Which, basically, it's this movie about Adam Sandler's character and Don Cheadle's character. Mainly it's Adam Sandler's character from what I read so far.
Yep.
Dealing with the grief of his wife and daughters being on one of the September 11th planes.
Yep.
And how meeting up with an old friend of his, Don Cheadle, and trying to deal with the grief and so forth. And apparently, he's really good in it.
Yeah.
And that's really good to hear.
Wells actually says it's potentially Oscar nomination
worthy. Which is fantastic.
I can't tell you how excited I got for this movie. I hadn't even heard about it. By seeing him looking sort of like one guy commented, like Bob Dylan, this weird hair.
He's got the weird poofy hair.
You know what he looked like? He looks like the lead singer of Oasis, you know, this weird kind of hair. All I know is it looked like, didn't recognize him. Seeing that, hearing the review, I'm going, God, a movie I hadn't heard before. I'm really interested in seeing this thing. I hate so many Adam Sandler movies, but I've seen him interviewed and I like him as a person. And I'm looking forward to seeing a movie where he really stretches.
When I went down to that Comic-Con trip, I was also swung through LA and did as many studio tours as I could. Mm-hmm. And we were on one of the lots, and I think that was the closest we got to a star. Was we were like 200 feet down, and a silver town car pulls in, and the tour guide said, oh, that's probably Adam Sandler, because he's going into Adam Sandler's production offices, and that's the sort of car. And they're like, oh, okay. And you know, you couldn't tell who it was. It could have been anybody, but they said it was Adam Sandler.
Cool.
Anyway, you emailed me that the item that Clooney and Soderbergh are dissolving their production company.
Yeah, it's hard Section to know. Eight. It's hard to know what's going on with that. They were basically saying, well, we always said ourselves we'd end this when it got to be more about, we're talking about money than the art or whatever. And they were sort of saying it's on good terms, but you just got to wonder, is it on good terms? What's going on?
I would imagine so, because they've done so much work together.
And they still got work to go. They're still
it's hard to believe that sudden they've drifted apart, or so, you know, somebody slept with the other guy's wife.
It just it's amazing because they've put out so many interesting things.
You kind of have to trust. I almost trust what Clooney says. He doesn't seem like a bullshit artist. Typical, you know, here's the typical Hollywood spin. So I'm going to go out on a limb and believe him.
Yeah.
And say that they're going to continue to work together. It's just that for whatever reason, they decided to stop being involved with this company.
And what's interesting is the guy, the former actor they hired essentially to run the company, Grant Heslov, who wrote, did he write Good Night and Good Luck, I think?
Co-wrote
it. So he's the guy that Clooney's now working with, and they've created a new production company, which is interesting. And I know the old production company is still contractually obligated to deliver those bubble movies. They've got like four that he's going to do. So it's not like it's over, but I don't know, just interesting. And I hope it means Clooney and Soderbergh continue to make interesting movies for not a lot of money that are their passion. Cause I'm thinking that's one of the best things that's come out of Hollywood in the past 5 years. So anyway, I just thought that was interesting.
You also emailed me the Colin Farrell Tonight Show thing.
Oh,
yeah. Is that something you wanted to talk about?
Jesus, did you see? Well, not necessarily, but it was like, oh my God, this stalker
on the Tonight Show, and a stalker shows up in the audience and basically manages to get up on stage.
Paranoid schizophrenic. I remember thinking, I was reading that, I'm going, oh my God, she could have just easily shown up and hurt him. And I'm looking at that going, I could care less about celebrities, but wow, that's scary. You got to realize they live a tough life. Even if they want to be accessible, the more accessible they are, the more they open themselves up to somebody potentially killing them. That was creepy and scary. But anyway, I didn't really want to talk about it. I just thought it was stunning. And I wish they had had the guts to show it on TV, but they literally cut it. Won't show it. Typical Jay Leno move.
Next up was TV shows on YouTube.
Oh yeah.
The one you sent me, apparently a couple of networks are either allowing or actively putting some of their failed pilots onto YouTube and letting people see them.
Yeah. And to the point that one generate the buzz, but it got so much buzz that they've decided to actually put this thing into production. That's pretty cool. I mean, to embrace this whole
thing. To not be afraid of change.
Absolutely.
That's how you win, is you embrace change. Although listening to This Week in Tech, they're talking about YouTube again and saying, you know, they keep growing by such a phenomenal amount.
But nobody can figure out how they're making money.
And we're still waiting to see a business model, gentlemen. But apparently they've got a new terms of acceptance. By putting your video on YouTube, you let them use it however they want. If they want to sell it, they can do it.
And I sent that to you because I was looking at that going, oh my God, this is appalling. And then some other people wrote later, said, no, it's not quite like what people are making it out to. What they were making it out to originally was their essentially their EULA was saying that you put it on there, and we own everything about it. We can market it, we can sell it, we have every right, doing everything, we do this and that. And actually from what I understand, it actually says is, first of all, you retain ownership to everything. Mm-hmm. It's not them. They have rights. They have rights to the extent that it's on their service. Once you take it off, they lose the rights to them. Uh-huh. They actually pointed out to some extent it was a protection model for them for a variety of reasons. It ended up being kind of a tempest in a teapot kind of thing. But it was a little scary when you read it and you started thinking, if I put something fun on there and they're claiming rights to it, they're basically saying they can utilize it, but not necessarily. Yeah, I know. That was immediately what I was thinking of. Oh, so that's how they're going to make money, by taking my content. Because I've got a couple videos, like videos that I did for the nonprofit organization I worked for. It just was the most convenient thing to upload it to YouTube and have the YouTube link, because the bandwidth on my website, first of all, was way too slow. And second of all, it was scary thinking of a whole bunch of people wanted to download this video. Sudden they're going to start charging me a bunch of money. Well, why not just have a YouTube flash version where it's quicker? It's their bandwidth. I thought it's a great service.
All the tech people are just, they're pretty convinced that sooner or later it'll get sued out of existence.
Yeah, you're probably right.
All right, moving on. Oh, did you hear about the Superman 2 Richard Donner thing?
Yeah. Oh, man, that's so frigging cool.
Which is basically Warner Brothers is letting Richard Donner release his own version of Superman 2, which he was, which he filmed at the same time as Superman 1.
Yeah.
But as soon as Superman 1 was assembled, they kicked him to the curb and brought in the other guy to finish Superman 2.
It was awful. And one of the best commentaries and movies of all time, DVDs, is the original Superman 1, because they let Dick Donner talk and be open about it. And he clearly seems like a cool guy. And he was thrown under the bus after this. Mm-hmm. They pumped so much money in this movie, the Salkinds, that after they were done filming the first one and they had filmed the second one basically at the same time, they thought it was a disaster. So they had to show to the movie companies that they were going to be tough. So prior to releasing Superman 1, they kicked Dick Donner under the bus and they hire Richard Fleischer to do the second one. But Dick Donner had filmed 90% of the second movie, and they're letting him come back and do it. I can't believe how cool that is. And they're actually, if I'm not mistaken, they're actually pulling elements out and spending some money using old temp stuff and other stuff so he can literally finish his vision.
It'll be interesting to see. Will they continue to use the big enveloping cellophane version of the logo from his
chest? Yeah, that's true.
I haven't seen Superman 2 in forever. But I remember that and thinking, even at the time I saw it, thinking that was gay.
Well, part of it, I felt bad because to some extent it was these three villains, but they just kind of walked around and it was more jokey than I probably want it to be. And it was a little underwhelming to some extent, but I liked it. And I enjoyed hearing Dick Donner so much in the first one that I think this is the coolest thing ever.
And the other thing, which I'm surprised you haven't sent me a freaking email on, was that Reds is finally being released on DVD.
What? Oh, my God. I didn't hear about that. When is this? Like,
authentic surprise from Ricardo.
Well, it's perhaps my second favorite movie of all time.
When we're done recording, go to digitalbits.com, and they've got some information. I don't know the time frame.
Do they finally convince Beatty to participate in this?
I can't remember. Wow. I read it at the time and I can't remember now what it said.
Wow. That is like literally, it's probably maybe my favorite movie of all time. Certainly my top two.
Tied with?
Lawrence of Arabia.
Okay.
But it's so brilliant. Such a wonderful movie on so many levels, and a movie that just screamed to be on DVD. There's a few out there, and this is like one of the most prominent ones, considering it was nominated for so many Academy Awards, and it was just stunning achievement, just stunning. Ugh. It has one of those scenes, you know how they have scenes where a guy and a girl have been apart and then they meet up after a very long time. It's a classic scene in movies, and it's done more wonderfully in this movie than I think any movie ever.
Cool.
It's truly a brilliant movie. Wow. That's good news. I hadn't heard that.
Cool. To go in another direction, you emailed me a YouTube video earlier in the week, which was the Lebowski F edit.
Oh, yeah.
Which somebody took the Big Lebowski and edited it down to just where they say the F word.
Which like I had said it was like 400 and some. Turns out it's 181 times.
It was brilliant. It was funny how much of a flavor of the film. It's like you saw the entire arc of the film through the Fs. F, 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 F. What the F are you talking about? Oh, man. Very funny.
And what's so great is,
if you don't mind hearing the F word 200 times in a row, go to YouTube and search for Lebowski.
Well, you know what's weird is you, me, and a lot of other people, but you and me in particular, we have seen the movie several hundred times. So because
not quite that many.
Well, maybe 150 times,
lot,
maybe.
A lot.
So because we've seen it so many times, each and every time, almost when they say it, it immediately evokes the scene.
Because we immediately know the surrounding lines.
We know what
preceded the situation.
And it was coming at me with at such a machine gun pace that my brain almost went into overdrive because I knew what was before that I knew what was after. It was
exactly
awesome.
Exactly.
It was really great. I was like, boy, thank God for YouTube, because that's what this is all about, is stuff like this.
Have you seen It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia yet?
I did. I actually,
how about
I downloaded it. It was a recommendation. So I watched the first episode of the second season.
Okay.
And it was a show called Charlie, I think, Gets Crippled. And so here's what the show basically is. It's basically characters that in almost no way are likable. meaning they're a-holes.
Yeah.
And I like that. Now the show took me a little while to get into the beginning, cause it's basically, although it is two cameras, it's basically like a one camera comedy show, no laugh track. And it was sort of, I was trying to get into the tone. I was going, okay, this seemed a little forced, this there. And then there was actually one laugh out loud thing that Danny DeVito did that I was just, it was funny. And the minute I laughed at that, everything thereafter was funny to me.
Well, right on.
So it was the kind of show where, I don't know, it's hard to recommend to some people because they're just, I don't know. It definitely, even though I know that the person who recommended it, his wife enjoys it, it seemed like a guy show to me. Mm-hmm. And so I hard to recommend it to gals, but boy, it's, if you're looking for mean spirited stuff, it's, of people making themselves look dumb.
It's funny how often guys appreciate the jackass character traits in shows and absolutely women don't. Cause I have the same thing, like Arrested Development. I loved it.
Yep.
My wife, she thought it was okay, but she couldn't take a lot of it because she found the characters so unlikable.
Yeah. They get mad
so
at them.
Unlikable things. And like, I completely understand where she's coming from. And yet I think it's hysterical. And I think I don't, you know, it's a generalization, but it's borne out on the whole, guys like unlikable characters a lot more.
Yep.
And I think, you know, sort of the same thing with House. I love House. Yep. I love Hugh Laurie's portrayal of this character, who's a complete jackass, but he's brilliant. Yep. He's funny. He's always got, you know, it's a TV show. Of course, he's always got the great lines.
Yep.
And, you know, there's a part of you that really wants to be like that.
Yeah.
I don't care if I'm liked. I just want to be smart and funny.
Yeah.
But, you know, which says something about me that I want to be a jackass as long as I'm smart and somewhat witty. But I think there's a fair amount of guys that are like that. They're like, I, for whatever reason.
Yeah. Well, this show I thought was an awesome recommendation, and I have an immediately signed up on iTunes to download the rest of them because I'm going on a little trip, and it'll be perfect trip watching entertainment.
I'll have to check it out. I read, and interestingly, last week's The Business podcast had a section on this show, and I didn't even realize it was about the show until halfway in when they bring up the name. Basically, it's like a guy and two buddies. Do you know this history?
From your buddy told me about it.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Well, from the version I got from The Business was a guy and two buddies. One of them had basically was in the process of selling a script for a movie over the course of a year.
Mm-hmm.
And hearing, I don't know which studio it was, if it was a big studio, saying, change this, change that, make it more funny, make it less funny. How come it sucks at the end of the year? Bah!
Yeah.
And, you know, at the end of the year, the guy had nothing. They hadn't bought it. It wasn't in production. He had wasted a year and was frustrated. And he said, I'm never doing this again. This has been too traumatic. And then in the course of carrying on, like he was literally a waiter, in the course of carrying on his life, he got this idea for a funny scene and thought, oh, I'll shoot it with my buddies with our camcorder.
Yep.
Did that, showed it around. Somehow an agent got a hold of it, or they contacted an agent.
Yep.
Agent said, you know what, guys, this is a show. This is good enough to be a show, production values notwithstanding.
Yep.
And so they basically, I don't know if they filmed a larger version of it, maybe, or I don't know if they took the original version around, but they started shopping it around as a show. But the big difference was they said, look, if you're going to buy this show from us, we're in charge and this is how we're going to do it. You're not giving us notes. You need to let us do it.
Yep.
And of course, because of that, they also
said the flip side is it's not going to cost much. We're going to keep costs low. So that's the appeal.
And then, you know, and that's not how it's done, quote unquote, in Hollywood.
It's the exact opposite of how it's done.
It's like, oh my God, you're interested in my show. Here, do whatever you need to do to it. Just give me the check.
Yeah.
I don't care anymore. Give me the check.
Yeah.
And the guy said, you know what? We're not going to do it that way because we're already starting out with nothing. So if you say no, we're not out anything.
Yeah, you're not putting us lower than we are right now.
Exactly. So that's why we can say you're doing it our way or no way.
Yep.
And finally, FX, the cable channel, said, yes, we think there's enough here. Yes, this is high quality stuff. Again, production values notwithstanding.
Yeah.
And that's essentially how they did it. They brought in a director, or they brought in some people that knew how to make a show.
Yep.
So it wasn't just these three guys sort of bumbling around, and it got renewed for a second season.
And and this is the season that Danny DeVito's part of it. And boy, let me tell you, at least in the first episode, it's perfect. It wasn't like, here's Danny DeVito, and he's wild. And he just fit right into that show.
They
perfectly.
Talk about how they got him involved, and apparently he had seen the show and liked it, although who knows if that's actually true. And the guy said, oh, okay, well, FX is telling us we need to get some star power.
Yep.
So if I'm hearing Danny DeVito likes it, I'm going to set up a meeting with Danny DeVito. Apparently that's not how it's supposed to be done, but somehow he got over to Danny DeVito's house.
Yeah.
Which kind of reminds me of Get Shorty now that I think about it.
Yeah.
And over the course of an afternoon of talking to him, also brought up the fact, look, my nephew doesn't know who you are. Yeah. It's time for you to introduce yourself to a younger generation of people so that they know who Danny DeVito is, which I thought was a really interesting argument to make. I would never have made that argument. That wouldn't have never have occurred to me.
Yeah.
To tell an actor, no one knows who you are anymore. Taxi is forever ago, so to speak. You know, Get Shorty is a long time ago. You know, people don't know who you are. That would never dawn on me to use that as an enticement, and yet it worked.
Yep.
And apparently it continues to work.
Well, it was great. The one scene that made me laugh out loud with it, because it's all about Danny DeVito's demeanor and his timing in it. It's stupid. He's negotiating with some guy over something. I can't remember what it was about, but the one guy's going, how about 10? Danny goes, I'll give you 6. And the guy goes, well, how about 9? How about 6? And the guy's like, give me 8. Well, how about 6? Give me 7. And then Danny DeVito goes, how about 4? And the guy goes, how about 6? Okay. It was, I mean, I've seen that a million times before, but it was done perfectly and it made me laugh out loud. And it was entirely because Danny DeVito was not bigger than the scene needed to be. He was perfect. Cool. And he was like a part of the ensemble, not the person. It was great.
I've got 2 last things on my list before we go into Riff Land.
Mm-hmm.
And it's somewhat recently the Major Nelson podcast, which is a guy who works in the Xbox division of Microsoft.
Yep.
I think he might be head of Xbox Live programming or something. I don't know what the hell he does. It's not a secret.
I've heard
he
of him, but I've never listened to it.
He did one recently about where he talked to guys on the Vista team about HD DVD versus Blu-ray and some of the technical considerations of either format.
Yep.
And it was very fascinating.
Yep.
You know, every so often I think about some phrase I just used and go, I'm college educated and I just said very fascinating.
Very fascinating is not bad.
Well, it's not that great.
Just let it drift on.
And it really is quite interesting to hear these guys say, you know, we were neutral to begin with, and then as we got into the different formats, here's why we chose to back Microsoft HD DVD.
Yep.
And it's because of, well, a variety of reasons, but it's you know, talking about something as simple as the durability of the disc.
Yeah.
Because HD DVD, like a CD or a DVD, puts the bit layer in the middle of 2 plastic polycarbonate sandwich, you know, halves. Whereas Blu-ray, that layer is right at the top with a very minimal coating, which leads to Blu-ray being much more scratch prone.
And imagine me and Blu-ray discs.
Oh God, you'd be a disaster. and that's a big factor. And you know, they list probably 4 or 5 really defining differences between the two. But it really does sound like HD DVD is doing it better, doing the job better. Is, you know, they start talking about throughput and compression and how the codecs do this and do that. And I'm not going to repeat the whole thing, partly because I'm forgetting the salient points. But you really come out of that listening going, I understand why Microsoft has chosen to back HD DVD. Although I'm sure they will support Blu-ray drives through Vista somehow. They're not going to just completely wall that off.
Oh, no, no. But, yeah, they're definitely going to hedge their bets, I would assume.
But in looking around, you can see that the early lead seems to be going to HD DVD.
Yeah.
Although
I noticed that, you know, that the magazine you have there, the new Maximum PC, they do their Dream Machine every year, and they got their hands on a Blu-ray drive, a burner that they've got in the system. Cost, it's $1,000, but they put it in their Dream Machine and they said, hey, we tried, we wanted to get both in this thing. There's nothing out there. So at least Blu-ray, there's trickling out some hardware besides that one thing.
Although there's some other things they mentioned, like Blu-ray, they have yet to get the dual layer out of the lab.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Which one of the big supposed advantages of Blu-ray is 50 gigabytes a disc.
Yep.
Whereas I think HD DVD peaks 30. Out at 30.
Yep.
And these guys are saying, well, A, they have not gotten that out of the lab. They have not gotten reliable double burn it, double layer action out of the lab. Beyond that, from a movie perspective, 30 really seems to be enough in terms of compression, in terms of we're running out of ways to use the space on a movie disc. Now, just as a complete computer storage medium, you're never going to run out. You're never going to have too much space on anything. Yeah. But from the movie perspective,
from a practical perspective, if you're taking even Lawrence of Arabia, 3-hour movie that was filmed in 65 millimeter, tons of information, four times as much, because it's like, that's how much extra information, even then it can't be more than about 15 to 20 gigabytes of data if they're doing it correctly. So the rest of it is how many commentary tracks can you throw on there? How many everything else? There probably is a limited, you know, unless they're making ultra high definition and they're thinking that thing through, but I haven't heard anything.
Sound best of breed can handle.
That said though, you know, that, you know, when they're talking about making all these movie cinemas digital, that is at an ultra high definition, that 4K scan. So, and that's supposedly being sent through a electronic pipeline over DSL lines, but ultimately you'd assume they would also provide it on a disc delivery. Well, what kind of discs would they do and how would they do it? Or is there a way, or is it like a tape delivery or a hard disc? I mean, I just wonder how they're ultimately going to throw that much data onto the screen and what they would use to do it.
I don't know, Mon Frere.
But it excites me because I love higher and higher quality.
Well, it gets me more and more considering the purchase of an HD DVD drive.
Yeah.
Not seriously right now, but, you know, I'm thinking about getting an Xbox 360 and getting the HD DVD drive as an add-on and thinking, you know, as an add-on price, that's not bad, assuming that as a player, it does the job.
Yeah.
Because apparently, you know, in reading about the original Xbox and the Xbox 360, of the multi-functions they do, actually functioning as a DVD player is the thing they do the least well.
Really?
Although, having said that, I can't dredge up any data to back that up. I think, you know, that because you use the controller as an interface and that's clunky.
Yeah.
But honestly, if that's the big because I heard it's progressive scan. That like the Xbox 360, just using it as a regular DVD player is progressive scan, which is better than I've got. Any hoozle.
Oh, wait, have you started looking? I know you've been talking about TVs.
I have. That has been put on hold for at least till September.
Really?
For reasons I cannot go into on the podcast. I'll tell you after we're done recording. Okay,
well, they're only getting cheaper, so that's good. So the longer you wait, the better it
gets. It's interesting because I had pretty much settled on, and this is actually the second thing I was going to talk about. The Sony, of all the technologies for HD right now, liquid crystal on silicon, LCOS, is only being done by Sony and JVC on a consumer level. Excuse me. And the Sony XBR sets are gorgeous. Yep. It's an LCOS rear projection.
Bright as you can possibly imagine.
Actually, no. The JVC HD ILA version.
Which is the one they have at Costco. There's one they have at Costco.
Yeah, the JVC HD ILA, which is their flavor of LCOS, is blindingly bright.
Because you go in there and it's like, cool TV. Oh my God, it's the sun.
Yes.
I mean, it's so incredible. And I don't mean that in they've just turned it up and it's too bright. It looks stunning.
Exactly.
It's like real life and the brightness adds to that. So.
But the Sony XBR series, which is a 1080p, 1080 progressive.
Yep.
Although it can't accept a 1080p input natively, it did scaling to get it to 1080p. Mm. Which, you know, nothing right now is at a 1080p resolution anyway. That's like future talk.
Yep.
Future proofing yourself. Anyway, the picture on this thing, when compared to anything else, is stunning.
Yep.
Absolutely stunning.
Yep.
And so I was thinking the 50-inch version of that was probably, you know, it was like $3,000. That's a ton of money. I've never spent that much money on such a frivolous item.
Yep.
But I was getting closer to accepting that. But turns out the new versions of it, so to speak, the new models, they've split the line into the premium version and sort of the entry level.
Yep.
And the entry level A2000 is supposed to look just as nice as the existing. So I was going to go with that.
Yep.
And that version is supposed to natively accept 1080p. And I think so
it's
lowered
not
the price.
Out yet, or it's coming out.
Supposed to be out beginning of August, August 2nd, with an MSRP of about $2,800.
Well, you heard all the stories that there's this huge glut right now because they supposedly are gearing up for all these European and other sales based on the World Cup, and it just didn't
happen. Well, I didn't
happen.
Hear that there was a glut, but I heard that sales only went up 3% as a result of the World Cup,
and they
was
thought
drastically under what they
estimated. Yeah, so pretty much they have all this stock, particularly with LCDs, that they are just trying to send out the door.
With most LCDs, I can see the screen door effect.
Oh, yeah,
and it
massively.
Bothers me. Although I will say Sony's LCDs do a better job of masking that than
my
others.
Dad's got a nice enough one, but of course he bought it way too early. He had some money and so he bought one for $1,800, and it's like a 23 inch. It looks so dang tiny, and at the time it was an awesome deal, but now it'd be like a $400 TV. So
but
a massive screen door effect. So.
Because I listened to the Major Nelson podcast on straight high definition again. We talked about this a few months ago.
Yep.
But I listened to it again as part of listening to the HD DVD Blu-ray commentary and really trying to pay attention to this time, because the guy they talked to from the Microsoft Studios really knows what he's talking about. And if you don't pay attention, you get lost quick.
Yep.
And the thrust of that podcast was, what are the benefits of the various HD formats for gaming?
Yeah.
And he's saying, here's the differences between 1080i, 720p, and 1080p. And saying 1080p right now, and they recorded it in February, is not 60 frames per second. It peaks out at 30 frames per second. And gaming right now, most gaming needs 60 frames per second.
Oh, it does. It throws you.
There's a temporal resolution, which is a phrase that I first heard there, but the frequency. So you can get a 1080p set, and this might not be true of the newest ones, but of the first generation 1080p sets, unless they're 60 frames a second, you're not really getting more than a 720p set. Because 720p, from what I understand, is natively 60 frames a second. So if you plug your Xbox 360 into it, it's going to look probably better than plugging into a 1080p
set. You know, and I, of course, come from the PC gaming world, and that is totally, it's all this hinky thing. Depending on how good your card is, you might have 90, 120 frames.
It never dawned on me that frames per second was going to be an issue with consoles and TVs.
Yeah.
You just assume that it's fine.
Yeah.
And so I'm glad I listened to it again, because it's plausible I would have spent a lot of money on this TV and then plugged my imaginary 360 into it and realized there was a syncing problem, or why is the frame rate suck so bad?
Yeah, and honestly, 30, it would be so visible. The gaming, it's critical for a number of reasons, but it just becomes so annoying, visibly annoying. There in that Maximum PC, they have some images of the people of Valve Interactive, which creates Half-Life games, and they're geniuses. It's a Seattle Bellevue company, and they're doing a whole new engine for Half-Life 3 that they're not telling anybody about, but they release some images from it, and it's like, holy crapola, it's so incredible, the lighting and everything else, that it's like, boy, if you don't have an end-all be-all, because they're clearly going in the direction of not just releasing on a PC, but at the same time releasing it on a next-generation console. And I'm looking at this going, man, they're going to take maximum advantage of this. And if you don't have the best high-def player for this, you're screwing yourself. I mean, you get the distinct impression that you just are going to be depressed if you don't have the best thing to play this game on.
Yeah, so. And it's interesting because there's definitely a constant march towards better graphics, more realistic graphics, more lighting and shading and pixels and polygons and yuck. And then you've got Nintendo with the Wii going almost completely in the opposite direction, saying, you know what, the Wii, God, I haven't said that aloud in a while. It's still something you want to make fun of. The Wii is not high definition. It's all about gameplay and saying, look, it doesn't matter how good the graphics are. If it's a fun game, people will play it. And they're right. And it's interesting seeing these two philosophies of thought, if you will.
It's definitely what they do best.
Granted.
Did you see the numbers of the DS and how many they've sold?
I haven't seen any numbers. I know that's doing very well.
Incredibly well. It's like 21 million units since they did that.
How awesome would it be to have awesome graphics and fun gameplay?
Oh, I know. That's the thing.
Of course, everyone that's doing awesome graphics just says they have awesome gameplay.
Yeah. Yep.
We've reached the end of our prescribed list. Is there anything you'd like to riff on?
No, nothing. Oh, I did get one of those road trips for my iPod so I can put.
You that's plug the packaging. iGriffin road trip.
Yeah, and first of all, it's a piece of crap, and I'm probably going to take it back and get another one because it only works, you know, the FM signal is.
Podlounge.com, and yep. You do a lot of research. People have really, really varying experiences with the FM transmitters.
Exactly.
Including the iGriffin, which is what I have.
Exactly.
They work great for some people, and they love them. Other people go through 4 and 6 months and hate them.
That's exactly, and I got the sense, and I realized, boy, I'm not going to pick the perfect one by reading these sites, because everyone has like a percentage that has poor experiences. Also, I know is I tried my brother's, and it worked okay in my car, and it's the same unit, so I'm going to take this damn thing. But it also caused my iPod to freeze. I was watching... Well, first of all, I'm not going to admit to watching TV while I was driving.
We've had that discussion.
But the car was stationary, and that is the truth, and it froze, and no amount of button pressing would stop it. And I had to reset it. And it's never frozen before, but it's frozen while connected to this thing. And that was like, and it did it twice. Huh. And I'm thinking,
I've never had a problem with mine.
That's junky. But anyway, I like the notion of it, but it is unbelievably hard not to sit there and go, hey, I'm driving to work. Let's turn on the Daily Show. And even if I want to listen to the Daily Show, the god dang thing is staring at me in the face. So I've got to figure out a way to not stare at it, because it's hard for me not to.
Well, and it's one of those frustrating things. Why can't Apple, A, build in a radio to the unit, build in, not add as an accessory, which they have done. And why can't they build in a transmitter?
Exactly.
I mean, at this point, I understand that they're pissing off a lot of the accessory manufacturers who are making bank off of transmitters, but still, it's one of those things where I will take a $10 price increase so that you can put $10 worth of chips inside to do this thing I want it to do.
My brother got the little accessory to the Nano, the running thing, the Nike thing.
Oh, yeah.
Says it works great. It's awesome. He didn't get the shoe. He just like Velcroed it into his regular shoe. Works great. And I thought, and what ticks me off is you can only use it with a Nano. I think it's because they don't want to warranty people running with a hard disk based one, which kind of ticks me off. But my brother says, got $30, works great. You log in on the Nike site. I mean, it really legitimately works great.
I think Apple is really poised to take off or reach another level. Take off might be exaggerating, but they've really stuck to their guns with just having stuff that works.
Yep.
They have resisted going away from that. Now, I think more and more people are discovering that, like more and more of the bloggers I read are saying, my piece of crap Sony crapped out.
Yep.
I'm on a Mac now. My fellow friend bloggers are on Macs now. We love them. They never break. They just do what they're supposed to do.
God, I wish I had enough money to get one. I've been, my mom, my brother, and my dad all in a 3-week period, all bought new 20-whatever-inch iMacs. And I was over there installing Parallels on my dad's computer and putting Windows on it.
I'd have to borrow the software that came with the new stuff, but it wouldn't work because they're all Universal App now.
Yeah, well,
they're all Intel code now.
So, well, needless to say, putting it on there, and there I am running Windows on it and switching back and forth, and it was like, there is, except for money, there is no reason why my next computer in any way, shape, or form should not, in fact, be a Mac.
And they're not, you know, perfect. They crash, they have problems, but
it's great on other levels, and besides, you have options now that you didn't have before.
Well, and I keep, you know, I've said many times in the past, I keep waiting for their living room box. When is the Apple PVR solution going to be out? They're almost there with the Mac Mini. It just needs the software to do it.
Yep. That's the computer I'll be buying.
And
as long as it's less than a grand, that's what I'll be buying.
I keep waiting for that. But, you know, you talk about the iPod, you talk about this, and supposedly at the developers conference in early August, they're going to unveil movie rentals through iTunes.
Yep.
Which is actually Jobs losing the argument, as opposed to selling the movies through iTunes. Yep. The studios won and held out, and they've got rentals. And you have to wonder, how long will it take between the release of that and some hacker coming up with a way to turn the rental into a you own it thing to strip the DRM? Because honest to God, I will probably take that hack and do it.
Yeah. For me, we're sitting here staring at 600 of my DVDs over there, and I like that. But on the others, I bought a bunch of them that I've had, you know, I bought the Season of the Shield or something. And then about a couple of weeks, I just deleted them all. Didn't bother saving them because I just realized that's not the way. I don't want to put much energy into trying to figure out how to save them and do them. So I probably wouldn't personally. I'll probably continue to buy DVDs because I don't want to put that energy into it.
It does become a space issue. Because
it did for me, that's for sure.
You know, if you rip a DVD, a standard one is 12 gigs, I think.
A DVD? No.
If I were to burn
seven gigs,
the one I burned to see if I could, I think it was the second Matrix.
Yeah,
I think it ended up being 12 gigabytes on my machine.
But, I see what you're saying.
Just rip, not...
Rip, okay, yeah, because it has to uncompress and do other stuff.
Yeah, rip the DVD, not try and compress the movie or do anything special.
Understood, okay.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Although the one weird thing about Apple is they're in Blu-rays camp, and you have to wonder why. Because if you're adopting a format that's going to piss off your people by being easily prone to scratches, that goes against the simplicity of Apple. And you have to wonder, why are they behind that? Is Sony giving them cash? Is it Apple just reflexively kind of thumbing their nose at Microsoft,
and also,
even though they've had a better relationship
lately? Well, and Apple has the built-in, you know, you push the disc in and it transports in. Well, the Blu-rays
slot loading drive.
Yeah, but Blu-rays, near as I can tell, those, they're going to be cassette-based kind of thing to keep people from touching them or something?
Well,
or?
They used to be. The original Blu-rays were in a cassette, but they went away from that because people hate cassettes.
Oh, so they're not going to have to do that.
As far as I know, no.
Well, is there any Blu-ray thing on the horizon anyway for Apple? Maybe they're just
not as far as I know.
Yeah. They're not going to do it unless they can get it relatively cheap to put it in that computer.
Well, Apple has no problem charging premium prices.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's see. We've got Miami Vice next weekend.
Yep.
We've got...
Snakes on a Plane, which
I was
at this point, I could care less. I was really intrigued by the whole thing.
I was never going to see it. I don't care how good a movie it was. Snakes creep me out.
Oh. See, it doesn't creep me out. I would have liked to see it. I was really into the whole fun
I don't care
buzz
if they're
thing.
Fake and CGI. They
but the minute they decided to say, we don't, you know, they're not going to preview for the critics. I just have no interest.
Yeah, that's. You know?
And I'm going, it may be fun, but at least put some energy into it. And they're basically saying, wow, we've done such a great job of getting the suckers to sell it on their
own. I heard a different take on that, which was, look, if the critics like it, it's probably not going to bring in any more business already. If they all a screening can do is hurt us because there's this buzz about it. People are going to see it anyway. If the critics are out there, the take I heard was a positive review isn't going to bring in anything additional.
In which case,
I understand.
Could be, but I think that's a generous way of looking at it. Troubled movie, but
I'm not going to defend it. It's got an awesome title.
It does. That's for sure.
That's about
and it's
all
got
I can think
Sam
about.
Jackson. So. Snakes on a mother blanking plane.
I thought there was another one I was really interested in seeing in a couple of weeks, and now I can't remember it.
Yeah, there's some other ones coming up.
But
for another podcast.
Clearly we have not done the research. all right, I guess we're done. There was no new email this week. I checked it this afternoon.
No.
I guess that's it. I keep thinking there's something else I want
to
say, but it's really just
pathetically
dwindling off now.
5 minutes after we put these mics down, it'll come to you.
All right, you guys rock at mustardayonnaise.com is how you contact us.
That's right.
And if you email us, we will most likely talk about whatever you say.
That's how much
on
we
the
love
podcast
you. That's how much we love you.
We do.
So I am Richard.
I'm Matt. Thanks for listening to Mustard Mayonnaise.